Now, for those of you that were not in Sunday school, and I refer now, I suppose, particularly to the Sunday school teachers, we were studying this morning of this portion of Scripture that I read in your hearing, with emphasis upon the thought that is developed later in two words, but God. But God. And the one that we dwelt most upon was what we find in Genesis 50, verses 15 and 20. If you'd like to turn to that very quickly, we'll not spend much time on that again. But in verse 15, when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us, and will certainly requite us all the evil that we did unto him. And they sent a messenger unto Joseph, saying, Thy father did command before he died, saying, So shall he say unto Joseph, Forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren and their sin, for they did evil unto thee. And now, we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of thy father. And Joseph wept when they spake unto him. Verse 20. But as for you, says Joseph, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. God meant it unto good. We took the Godward aspect of this experience that came to Joseph from the time that we started reading this morning until the brethren came in from where they had been sojourning to stay in the land of Egypt. But there were two aspects to our study, and that we are taking this morning now, namely the second, the manward aspect. We saw something of the Godward aspect earlier, and for those of you that didn't hear it and would like to, I suggest that you get a tape recorder and take the tape recording of it. Now we're going to deal with it as it must have appeared to Joseph, and it's not simply that we might, with interest, study his life, but make the applications to our own this morning, for I'm sure they exist. Manward then, what is the story of Joseph? How did it begin? Well, it begins in Genesis 37:3, as far as we are concerned this morning, with Joseph. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. And he exemplified that by making for him this robe that we spoke about a while ago, the coat of many colors. Now here are two things that enter into the story. First, the exceeding love of Israel for Joseph over his brethren. And secondly, the fact that this love was manifested by the coat of many colors which was given him. The result of this is seen in verse 4. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto them. Now, if I was dealing with the subject of parental behavior, we might have somewhat to criticize Israel for. This partiality brought dire results. It might be a hint to parents today. Yet how common and how easy it is for parents to become partial to one child above another. Their dispositions have a lot to do with it, and we find ourselves very often digressing and transgressing in this manner. But that is not the theme of our message. This is simply factors that entered into the story. We can say, with Joseph this morning possibly, why should they hate me? And we can say concerning our people today, why should they hate us? Why is it that they can't speak pleasantly to us? And the natural answer is this, you've departed from the faith. Right? Now let's go to verse 5. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. I think Joseph made a mistake in telling his brethren. Saved himself a lot of trouble if he had. But he didn't. He said unto them, Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, We were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaf stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. They got the message. What do we call that today? Joseph communicated. They understood exactly what the dream meant, for we read this, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dream. The old compromiser comes along and says, "There you are, Joseph. See what a fool you've made yourself to be. If only you hadn't done this. If only you hadn't told them. You had just kept that in your heart and watched God work. You wouldn't have had this hatred piling up against you." But Joseph evidently was too naive for all of this. And so there was the increased hatred toward Joseph on the part of his brethren. Now we'll go over the part where he dreams another dream, and this time his father rebukes him for it, even though it says in verse 11, "And his brethren envied him, but his father observed this say." You know, if we were to make another message out of this, we would like to show you the startling parallel between Joseph and the Lord. The parallels are many, many. And here is one. Do you remember that when Jesus said to his parents, "Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business," that Mary treasured all these sayings in her heart? Now with this man, he treasures all these dreams or observes these words of Joseph and remembers them. Now then, the next thing that enters into the story is this visit to Dothan. And I put it this way, Dothan instead of Shechem. He was told to go to Shechem because there his father thought the brethren were taking care of the sheep. When he arrives at this place, he cannot find them. They've gone to Dothan. And the maps tell us that Dothan is about 15 miles to the north. And more than that, it is a highway over which the caravans traveled from the east to Egypt. Now, I'm very wicked this morning. I wonder if there were any saloons on the highway. Any nightclubs. He's already given the father an evil report of these men. And we've already seen the suggestion that those words in italics there, about going into the field, are also suggestive to feed their flocks. If you leave it out, it makes a very different reading. And Israel said unto Joseph, "Do not thy brethren feed in Shechem?" However that might be, we might quarrel with that. But the point I'm making here is, Dothan instead of Shechem. Was this a mere coincidence? Was this something that altered the whole train of events? It certainly was. For it was a result of them going to Dothan that put them on the highway where the caravans went by, and they sold Joseph to the Midianites, and he went down into Egypt. It would have been 15 miles off the travel road. That wouldn't have happened in all probability. We talk about circumstances in our lives. They come and they go. With what significance? This was a very small thing, and yet it changed the life of Joseph altogether, and concerned others in the family most naturally. And then you'll notice something else here. If you look down at about, about 18. "And when they saw him afar off," even Joseph, "even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, Behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit." Here is the evidence of changed plans. Their plan was to slay him. Put him in a pit. Tell the lie that some beast had killed him. Now it's Reuben that comes to the rescue. And he says, "No, let's not do that." Look at verse 22. Or verse 21. "And Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands, and said, Let us not kill him. Reuben said unto them, Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hands upon him." Now he said that according to a little... Have you got brackets in your Bible here? All right, now here's why he did it. He didn't tell them about it, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again. So Reuben, why Reuben? He's the firstborn, he's the eldest, and there is a responsibility that he feels for Joseph. And so he is assuming his responsibility in the family, and he seeks to deliver them, or Joseph rather, out of their hands. Now there's been therefore a change in program, but there's a double turn of events here. They listen to Reuben and they put Joseph in the pit. Now somehow or another Reuben disappears from the picture for a moment, and whilst he's gone, they take Joseph out of the pit, for they have sold him to the Ishmaelites or the Midianites. Poor Reuben, when he comes back, he's all upset because there's no Joseph. What about this? Just happenstance? I don't know whether poor Joseph looked at it that way, but I know that all these things changed the tenor of his life and the way that he was to go. So instead of slaying, it was selling. And he was sold into Egypt for 20 pieces of silver. Again, you get the parallel? Well, there's one thing that we can say, the Lord was of little more value than Joseph. For Jesus fetched 30 pieces instead of 20. I guess there must have been inflation in that day too. 20 pieces of silver was the price of a slave. And according to the stories that we read of this time, slaves were very much in demand in Egypt. So this all enters into the picture. They sold him for 20 pieces of silver, and he goes down to Egypt and again sold to Potiphar. And we read about that in verses 36 on. Now, we're not going to go into the story in detail there, but I do know this, that in Potiphar's house, we have some evidence of circumstances, or what shall we call it? Chance? Is it chance, do you think, that he is sold into Potiphar's house? From Joseph's standpoint, from the Midianite standpoint, from the brethren's standpoint, it was immaterial who had him. It could have been anyone, but it was Potiphar. Well, you say, what is that? Well, listen to what develops. You know what happened in Potiphar's house, and it's a rather strange thing. If you look at chapter 38, I believe it is. No, 39. Where the story is taken up. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him at the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph. Didn't look like it. If you're going by outward appearances, you'd say it was just the opposite. Where is God? He's forgotten to be gracious. He's not in the story. No, he isn't. He's behind the story. We saw that in the earlier message. Potiphar's house. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. Probably Potiphar saw more than Joseph did. Very often people can see more that's happening to us than we see happening to ourselves. And so we oftentimes hear, "I told you so." Ever heard that? Nobody ever said it to you? "That's just what I told you would happen if you did such and such a thing." Well, in this case it was a little better than that. For Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him and made him an overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. It came to pass in the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not all that he had, save the bread which he did eat. Now then, so far so good. It seems that there is a little reprieve for Joseph, humanly speaking. But it isn't very long before Satan gets busy, and in the form of Potiphar's wife, he is falsely accused, and as a result of that, regardless of the blessing that he has been to Potiphar, without any trial or any say-so of his own, he is cast into prison. Couldn't God have prevented this false accusation? Wasn't Joseph faithful? Why didn't God intervene? Why didn't he stop this woman? Why? That's all we ask. You know, we're very adroit at asking questions, but it's another thing to have them answered oftentimes. And God doesn't answer many of the questions that we raise simply because that would frustrate something of his purpose. God couldn't tell Joseph why these things were happening, but God knew. Now you'll say this is a very funny way of looking at it, but supposing this event had never happened. Supposing there had never come to Joseph this enticement to evil. He would have remained in Potiphar's house. Well, you say to me, isn't Potiphar's house better than prison? Undoubtedly. No question about that. But you know, it's true, and many people have said it, God's way up is first down. And so he goes down into prison as a result of this accusation. Jailed, in other words. Now, isn't it funny? Or is it? Look at verse 20 and 21 of chapter 39. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. He was there in prison. I would take it that this could mean not only the butler and the baker, but the political prisoners of Egypt. Those that had raised their voices against the king. Rulers maybe, magistrates, or someone that disagreed with the government. The king's prisoners. It was a special prison in that sense. A place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in prison. But God, or the Lord, was with Joseph again. At these two crucial points in the story, we have this "but God" coming in. But that's thrown in not for Joseph's benefit, but for ours. Joseph didn't know anything about this at the time. He could see later on that God had given him favor and so on. But the result of this is that Joseph is able to help two men, the butler and the baker. And you know how he was able to help them? They had dreams too. And Joseph was able to interpret the dreams. Coincidence again. Circumstance again. Accidental. A remarkable thing indeed, but look what happened. Joseph was able to interpret the dream, and as we said a little earlier in the other service, the one was elevated to his position, and the other was elevated to a tree and lost his life. All according to their dream and the interpretation that Joseph had given. Now then, the interesting point here from the human standpoint is the perfect humanity of Joseph is seen in this, that when he told the dream to the butler, he says, "Now when the king restores you to your position, will you please talk to him about me? I'm here unjustly. I've never had a trial. You just talk to the king about me that I might at least have a hearing." And the dear old butler said, "Yes, yes." And then went and forgot all about it for 2 whole years. And it would have been for a much longer time, but even Pharaoh has a dream. Now listen, why should he tell the dream? Well, let me see. I'm looking now at chapter 41, if you don't mind. Pharaoh dreamed. And we won't go into the dream, but in verse 5, he slept and dreamed the second time, and behold, 7 ears of corn came up upon one stalk, rank and good, and so on and so forth. And then in verse 7, then Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. It came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt, and all the wise men thereof. And Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, "I do remember my thoughts this day." So the butler must have been in the hearing when the dream was told to the wise men. Probably he was there giving Pharaoh a little wine to sip while he told the yarn.
and it's brought back to his remembrance. Now, don't you see, beloved, here's another circumstance arising, another purely accidental, coincidental event, that the butler should happen to be there, that the Pharaoh should happen to have a dream, and that the butler also knew about dreams, so he happened to tell Pharaoh, I'm awful sorry, but 2 years ago I had a dream, and it was told me exactly what was happening. That man's name was Joseph. Well, go and get him! And immediately Joseph is brought into the presence of Pharaoh. At least he was given enough time to be dressed up and look presentable. And then the dream is told to Joseph, and he relates it with the result that he is exalted to a new position. The sequel we've already seen. Joseph is the man who opens the storehouses of Egypt to the populace. The famine is in the world, and people are coming from all over the place. And as a result of that, the brethren of Joseph come from all over the place. And he recognizes his brethren. Remarkable that they didn't recognize him. Do you know how many years have passed from the time that they sold him until now? About 20 years. Long time. No see. No recognize. I wonder how Joseph recognized them. Not too hard. It was 10 to 1. 10 brethren came. He could recognize 10 far more easily than the 10 could recognize one. And then later it was 11 that came. Now the sequel to all that is this, you remember, as we read in chapter 50, after the father had died, the brethren have a terrible touch with conscience, and they're afraid that Joseph will now be vengeance inclined, and so they come to him and they ask his forgiveness, and he weeps and says, you meant it for evil, but God meant it unto good. Now, all this is just something very interesting to me for this reason. Let's make the application. That's the interpretation. God was working, but we're taking the manward side. And let's go back and ask the question, is it not possible that during all these experiences, there must have been some element of doubt, at least the temptation to doubt God's will, God's love, God's kindness, as far as Joseph was concerned. Look at all these things, summing them up. What is it? I said it's possibly a mistake. At least many would regard it so, for Joseph to have told his dream. That was the one thing. It was a misadventure. Dothan instead of Shechem. A change of place and a change of plan. When he was sold into Egypt, do you not suppose that Joseph wondered, at least that much could be said, he wondered what was happening to him? Where was God in all this? How could his dreams be realized if he was going to be sold into Egypt? The ingratitude, the hatred of his brethren, the changing course of events that took him down into Egypt, the king's dream, the butler's remembrance, bit of luck, wasn't it? Bit of luck for Joseph that this man happened to remember. Luck indeed. How many of God's children talk about luck? Well, the only way some of us talk about luck is this, bad luck. We don't get much of the other kind. Well, that's how Joseph might have reasoned, but he didn't. It all looked so coincidental, all these little incidental things coming together must have been pure coincidence. The butler's remembrance, the Pharaoh's dream, the telling of the dream, and all those things, the famine, and then the fame. Oh, no. But listen, beloved. Many times as circumstances come to us, these temptations to doubt God come also. How is God leading? I'm sorry that you weren't here for the earlier part, those of you that were not, or you would have seen the connection here. Listen, beloved, these things that happened to Joseph were not accidental. They were not unintentional. They were not incidental. They were providential. Now, would you take that and apply it to your life as I apply it to mine? The things that happen to me and to you are not accidental. Here again, Romans 8:28. For all things work together. You know what we say? The way we translate that? Some things work together for evil. God says all things work together for good, for them that love God, for them that are called according to His purpose. I say there is nothing in our lives that God permits to come in that is unintentional, or that could be called accidental or incidental. I know it's hard to believe. God has so many children to look after. Their lives are interwoven, or their lives are so bound up with so many things. Is it possible for God to order our steps? Well, the psalmist says so. The steps of a good man are what? Are ordered of the Lord. The Lord. A dear old lady was reading that one day, and she was a little nearsighted, and she read it like this. She looked at it. Oh, the steps of a good man are ordered of the Lord. Isn't that true? The steps and the stops. Paul found it so. He would go over into a certain country and the Spirit forbade him. There was a stop, and we need to watch those things. So there's nothing here that's incidental, accidental, or unintentional, but providential, all of them. So don't get doubting God and saying, I wonder why this has had to happen, or you look back on your life and say, well, I sure made a mistake there. You may think so. But if you did, and it's a big if you were sincere in wanting the Lord's will to be done, and you acted according to the best of your ability at that particular time, you have no alternative to believe that, but that God did lead. You can't backtrack and doubt. I've said so many times, and I'll say it again, if I were to doubt my position here this morning, I would have to doubt my entrance into the ministry. For the same faith and the same method of getting to know God's will concerning this position was the same that I adopted in the beginning. I could go back earlier than that. There are many things in my life that have looked like mistakes. Some things have been quite tragic as a result of doing what I felt was to be the will of God, and the family has become involved. But if we believe our scriptures, these things that happened to Joseph that seemed so out of the way, so contrary to the plan of God, all proved to be in His plan. There's hardly a step that you followed with me this morning, but what it was of God's ordering to bring Joseph from Hebron, a circuitous way, by way of Shechem, Dothan, Egypt. What for? Prison house and all the rest in between. Simply that God's purpose that was revealed to Abraham might be fulfilled, and the promise was made to Abraham, as we saw this morning, and I'd like to go back to that just by way of confirmation in 15, and let me see, verse 15 and 20. No, that's not right. 15 and 15. Well, let's take verse 13 on. He said unto Abraham, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. Now, God could have said, listen, Abraham, the children of Israel are going to go down to Egypt, and they're going to be down there for 400 years. He didn't say that. He said, they're going into a land, and they will be there 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge. And afterwards they shall come out with great substance. And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace, and thou shalt be buried in a good old age. So God assured him that though he would never live to see this thing which was promised, he could die in peace. God had promised, and God was faithful. And so it says here, but in the fourth generation they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. And that is God's answer as to why 430 years would pass before the promise was fulfilled. Why? The iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. And so you can say that many of these things that happened in order to bring Joseph all this way round was to get Israel into Egypt, and then after a long period of time, God would take up the thread again and take them out according to the promise He made to Abraham. But the great instrument here was Joseph, and in order that he might be an instrument of God,
he had to suffer many things, so many things that seemed so utterly contrary to God's leading. Beloved, where are you today?
Well, that's for you to answer. But as you look back and say, well, I wonder about this and I wonder about that. God has brought you and me, God has brought us to this place.
No accident. Not just coincidental, but providential.
Let us take heart this morning and go on remembering, but God. Oh, what two words they are, but God. Did you notice our opening hymn? Rosie didn't know what we were going to talk about. You had that hymn picked out? He leadeth me. Oh, sad, solemn thought. That's the way some Christians act. Oh, blessed thought. Oh, words with heavenly disaster wrought. That seems to be the comment of a good many folks. No, let's believe this is true. And God is working out his purpose individually. From the man which side, it may look tragic. But from God's standpoint, it's fine. We're under the cloud. He's above it. We see the dull side. He sees the sun shining on the cloud. How different. Let's get God's viewpoint and not be disturbed by the so-called disasters and mistakes and lack of leading that seems to be ours, but believe that all this has been done that we might be where we are today. And what we are today and where we are today is all in the light of what he's going to do in the days to come.